News time now, 8:09. Well, the Summit County Council last week got an earful last week from the owner of Four Seasons Mountain Transportation Network, Sam Rubin. In the studio to respond to some of those concerns, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher along with Regional Transportation Manager Caroline Rodriguez. Good morning.
Good morning,
good morning.
Leslie.
So, Tom, you were there at the meeting when you heard from Sam. Caroline, you were not. But does Sam Rubin have a point that we're maybe paying too much money for a service, that being the Kimball Junction Circulator, that doesn't even meet the county's sustainability goals?
You know, the service does meet our sustainability goals in some ways. Certainly transit by itself is part of our meeting our sustainability goals. And putting that type of service in Kimball Junction so that we can move people around without them having to jump in their car, find a parking space in order to visit the two sides of Kimball Junction, with that highway being the barrier. Certainly those meet our sustainability goals. And, you know, so in the grand scheme of things, also, you know, the success of the program is something that we really want to promote. And Caroline's here. She's going to be able to talk to that specifically. But the circulator as a pilot is doing exactly what we wanted it to do. It's helping with that last mile problem that transit systems seem to have, and especially ours when we have such a spread out community. And we plan on advancing that even further.
So, Caroline, do we really have people riding that, and do we have the numbers to show that? And I'm going to ask, because I went out one day to ride it. I couldn't find the thing, and there was no signs on the bus stops, I mean, that said, stay here.
Sure. We absolutely are getting riders. Through May, we're close to 55,000 rides given. You know,
as of 2018?
From August through May, so 10 months of service, close to 55,000 rides given. When you look at the return on investment we're getting, that's about $5 per trip, and that is competitive with some of the largest fixed route transit agencies in the country, which is astounding. People are definitely riding the vehicles, and most important is that we're seeing that our busiest times are between 3 and 7 p.m. on work days, which really is demonstrative of the fact that it is serving exactly the market we want it to serve, i.e., employees, people doing errands after work, and people making that last mile connection to and from transit as part of their daily routine.
Okay. So those people have figured out where to stand to pick it up. I mean,
yes.
I've seen it certainly in the factory stores. That's easy enough because it does a loop there. But where else does it go?
So it goes the factory stores, the transit center, Redstone Avenue, down the center of Redstone and New Park, out past Wendy's, and back up past Whole Foods, and again to the outlets and the transit center. The lack of signage definitely is one of the shortcomings, and that's purely because I have not had the time to put together signage and get it installed on the route, and that is definitely on me and something we're working on. In addition to that, very soon you will see that the Kimball Junction Circulator will be incorporated into the Park City Transit app, and so you'll have real-time bus arrival and departure information. But in general, there are two vehicles circulating on that route, and it comes by where you're standing between every 10 and 15 minutes.
So 15 minutes would be the longest I'd have to wait. Because I think I waited 10. I'm just like, I
yes.
must be in the wrong spot.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we have a private business operating that for the county?
That is correct.
All right. And will that be rebid?
It will not be rebid now because we are seeing such a great return on our investment. We are operating it more affordably than we could through Park City Transit, just based on the current cost of service and the mix of services that Park City Transit is providing. It's a little bit more affordable for this contractor to provide it. And they're doing a great job. And, you know, the contract doesn't expire for another 2 years, I believe. We have an automatic renewal if we choose to do it that way. So we will continue with this contractor.
And then you can actually, you're looking also for a Canyons Village circulator. When does that go into effect?
That is an option we are exploring. There has always been a Canyons area circulator called for in our short range transit plans that we've done in conjunction with Park City. And that was just an option, and we were looking at potential costs. There is no plan to put it into effect or service immediately. We have an approximate route. We don't know the vehicle configuration. We haven't even determined if Park City Transit will be providing that service directly. We are not to that point yet. It was more of, for my council, if we wanted to put in a Canyon circulator within months, how much could it cost and what could you do?
So was that, are we talking about both of them for more than $400,000? Was that what I heard? Or so would that be a separate?
That's a totally separate service. But it's the conversation has also been a little bit misleading in that it's not a circulator service. It's pretty expansive. It's called a flexible routing. And so what it does is it does operate as a circulator on a prescribed alignment, but it also has allowances for people who are not on the alignment to make a ride request via an app. The vehicle will then flex off the route to pick them up at their door and bring them back to the fixed route. So that allows us to serve areas that maybe don't have the demand for fixed service, but also may have rides that need to occur once in a while.
So would that happen just within the Canyons Village area, or are we talking about more of the basin area?
When we were looking at it, it was just for the Canyons area. But again, it was just meant to be illustrative of the service we could provide.
Where's the money for the circulator coming from?
The current circulator service is funded through the additional sales tax revenues that were passed in 2016 by the voters.
And that's where the money for the Canyons circulator would come from as well?
It could also come from additional revenues if those become available.
Yeah, and I think you reported that the county's legal staff has determined that the Canyons circulator is within the original RFP so that the county wouldn't have to put out another bid?
That's correct.
Yeah. And I guess I just, why wouldn't you? I mean, we've got a local guy here. He's developed his own app. He's got electric vehicles, and he says he's willing to do it for less money.
I would encourage the listeners to critically review that proposal. It's not something I was involved in, so I am getting this information secondhand. So I took it upon myself to investigate. And I don't think that the full story is out there in terms of the service that is being proposed. I can say that I am very happy with our contractor, and because we've already gone through the procurement process, I do have the ability to execute that contract, and it is something we are considering.
And further than that, one of the things that might have been a little confusing from the comments that were made to the council last week is that this gentleman did not propose on any of the services that the county is providing. So we really can't even back up into our own procurement process and look at his proposal because he didn't propose.
So my understanding is that he may just be starting his own and offering it for like a buck a ride, I guess, with those contributions going to a nonprofit organization. Does it make sense to have two of them out
there?
I'm
not aware of that. So,
yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about some of his complaints about the county not having any regulations on taxis. Is that something the council's willing to look at? Or
well, I mean, I think as a regulation body, we're always looking at what it is we can regulate. I'm not even sure, haven't had that conversation with the attorney's office yet to know whether counties have the ability to regulate in the manner that the gentleman suggested. Certainly cities do under state law. And some do, but I'm not aware of what counties are able or not able to do in this case.
Hmm. And then would anything include background checks? I mean, that's...
I don't know the answer to that because I don't know the base question of whether we're even allowed to.
So will this discussion come back about the circulator and taxi regulations come back to the council? Or?
If the council asks for that, I haven't had any discussions with them at this point on the taxi regulation issue. We'd probably first talk to our cities within the county to see what they are doing or what they're not doing, and have a conversation from there. It's more than just the county making a decision whether to do something or not. You know, certainly if we were looking at that, we'd want to look at best practices and look at consistency around our county, if that was the case. But haven't had that request to look at that yet.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to add?
That's all we've got.
That's all we've got. Thank you.
Okay. Tom Fisher and Caroline Rodriguez with Summit County. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:35. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Park City Recreation offering a number of summer youth programs as well as some fly fishing lessons in the studio with details. I have Recreation Manager Karen Yoakum. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me in this morning.
Yeah, so let's start with the Tiny Triathlon training and event here in Park City. Never too early to start building extreme athletes.
That's right. We're just hopeful they'll come and try it for the first time. We have a camp starting next Monday, the 11th, from 4 to 5:30 in the afternoon, where kids will practice their swimming skills and then learn how to go straight from swimming to their bicycle and then on to running. And that'll be the week directly before the 6th annual Tiny Tri, which is held at the Mark and in the neighborhood right there in Park Meadows. It's very short. It's a lot of fun, and it's an Olympic Day event. So we celebrate the Olympics in the whole process of that fun event.
So what's the cost of that?
The cost is $20 if you pre-register and $25 if you register the day of. And we do have scholarship pricing available also.
Okay. You also have, what, an archery camp?
We have archery, several different sessions. The first one is for 2 weeks, 2 days a week, and each class is 2 hours long. These classes are all held at Treasure Mountain Middle School in the weight room. And archery is a phenomenal sport for anybody. Anybody can do it. Girls, adults, youth. These classes are targeting youth. You don't have to be strong. You don't have to be big. We can teach you the skills, and it's a lot of fun. It's your non-traditional sport. Eventually, it can get you outside. We happen to do this class inside, and the school is very generous in allowing us to use their equipment and in the school.
So equipment like with arrows?
Yep, bows and arrows, targets. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, again, that's happening at Treasure Mountain. Do you have the days of the week that's happening?
Yep. The first session starts June 19th, and it's Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9 to 11 in the morning for those 2 weeks till the 28th. And then, again, in July, there's two 4-day sessions, July 16th and July 23rd. They start Monday through Thursday, and those are 8:30 to 10:30. And those are all at Treasure Mountain, and they can be registered at parkcityrecreation.org.
Okay. And do those get – are those kind of progression classes that you maybe start with the 2 weeks? And
then... The last one in August would be a progression. You have to have attended another session to go to the one in August. It is more of a challenging – where you're challenging yourself to improve your scores as well as some competitions with the other kids in the class. So – you can take the class. I've had kids take the class multiple times, and they improve, and they seem to really enjoy the challenge of the different. We play some different games that allow you to hone in on your aiming.
So what are the ages? I mean, are they broken up into age groups? Or
Nope, the class is all together. It starts at age 10 and goes up from there. So there's really no top limit other than, and if an adult desperately wanted to do it and they could come in the morning, they're welcome.
Okay. Let's see. You've also got a fly fishing class?
Yep. We have fly fishing as well as spin casting for kids. Fly fishing is for kids age 12 and up. And the regular fishing is for kids age six and up. We have two sessions for that, 6 to 9 and then 10 and up. At different times in the evening. And those are all held at the Deer Valley Ponds.
Okay. So people just need to register? You have all of the
They do need to register. There is one program that you don't need to register for, and that's our community fishing event. And that is a free fishing day. It's from 9 to noon on Saturday, June 23rd at the Deer Valley Ponds. And all of the parking for our program is at the far north end of Lot 5, so furthest from the Snow Park Lodge. And we will be set up right there, and we'll have all the equipment. We have been lucky enough to receive some grants as well as a number of donations from local businesses to support this program. So we have everything anyone would need to go fishing.
Okay. So who you got teaching the fishing classes?
The fishing classes are taught by volunteers. So the Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife Resources, puts on the – it's their program. The fishing program is their program. They have a teaching part of the program that they provide to us. And the volunteers are generally people who are involved in the dedicated hunter program, and they need to get volunteer hours to get their tags. And most of them are outdoorsmen who love to fish and hunt, so they come and help out, as well as other volunteers who just like fishing. And then there's me, and I love all of it. So,
The community fishing event, June 23rd, my guess is that's that statewide free fishing day. So you wouldn't need a license. But what about the classes? Do you require licenses there?
We require a license for the fly fishing class. If you're age 12, you need a fishing license. For the other classes, we don't require a license, as those are the ones that are directly related to the DNR program. The community fishing day, no one needs a license. That's not the actual free day in the state. However, we are permitted to offer it on a date that's compatible with the scheduling that we have. We also have, for the fly fishing program, the High Country Fly Fishers provide all the volunteers for that program, and it's one-on-one. So if you have a child that's interested in fly fishing, this is a way to go because it's affordable, all the equipment is provided, and you have people who spend many, many, many hours on the water, so they know what they're doing.
Great. What else have you got? Anything?
I think those are the main ones we're talking about. Of course, we have a plethora of activities all summer for kids and adults. You can check out parkcityrecreation.org or stop by the Mark. We have everything right there.
Yeah, can you address the summer camp issues? I had somebody tell me that she went online at 6 a.m. and all but 2 weeks sold out.
Our summer day camp is extremely popular, and we are limited by the space that we have in our building. It is a licensed camp, and so we have to abide by state licensing rules, which means that we can only have a certain number of children in the facility that we have due to space constraints. So it does fill up very quickly. I know that our supervisor of that program monitors if people are, if they pull out, you know, that next person on the wait list gets in if they want that week or that time frame. And then on a daily basis, there's often, you know, somebody doesn't show up or somebody calls and says they can't come, and then we get that next person in. So we do our best to accommodate as many as we can.
Yeah, that's good news, I guess. Get a good camp that you're offering at a good price, and people want to be part of it.
Sure.
And so it's all happening at the recreation center. I mean, could you expand it to, like, Miners Hospital? And
We sometimes do that. We've rented the basement in Miners Hospital before to expand our space, and I'm not positive if we're doing that this year. I think we normally do. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, and I know that there was talk about redoing that building, but maybe with the budget cuts, is that on the kind of the chopping block, whether or not we expand that for the seniors? And
you know, I'm not positive what that answer is. I know that that is being discussed as to whether that's moving forward or not.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I think that's it. Just like to get some more kids out there, enjoy the fishing, and come and attempt archery. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. Karen Yoakum, Recreation Manager with Park City Municipal. Thanks. Well, Park City Reads is celebrating its successes and honoring a local woman for her contributions toward improving the lives of students with reading disabilities. In the studio with details, I have the co-founder of PC Reads, Jackie Blake, along with the honoree, Catherine March. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So, Jackie, why don't we start with you and maybe just give us a little bit of a background telling us what PC Reads is and why you founded it.
Okay, so for those of you that don't remember, Park City Reads stands for Recognizing, Educating, and Advocating for Dyslexic Students. After 4.5 years, we work with actually over Probably close to 300 families at this point doing something with resources. We're working very closely with the school district as far as replacing the curriculum, the reading curriculum, working with local tutors, the teachers, professional development. The three areas I would like to, Leslie, just tell you real quickly for the fundraiser, what the money is going to go towards are the three programming areas. So we work with students on something called MIND, which is mentoring, inspiring, and nurturing differences for the students in the area with reading disabilities and any other kind of difference. We also work with the parents in our advocate program. We now have three paid advocates that work with the families in the area to assist them in determining what their child's needs are and ensuring that they receive those correct resources. And the third area is with the teachers, and we're very proud to provide professional development grants. We've had over 15 teachers take us up on that and a few tutors locally in the area, and we're thrilled that the Hall Family Fund actually provides funds as well for that to make sure that we can continue to provide that more.
All right. So things have really changed in 4 years, because I can remember talking to you when the group was first forming. It was like there wasn't even any testing in the school district.
Yeah. And the beauty of that is that the district and PC Reads and the Ed Foundation and the Hall Family Fund, between all four of us working together, we've really not just changed the curriculum, changed the entire attitude in the community. Really, everybody wants the students to succeed, and whatever kind of services that everyone can become probably more doing well, everybody's really on the same page trying to work towards that goal.
So I mentioned celebrating. Tell us when and where that's happening.
So our fundraiser is called Gin and Phonics, kind of a play on words. It is this Saturday, June 9th at 6 p.m. at Temple Har Shalom. It will be heavy hors d'oeuvres, specialty cocktails, wine, dessert, live entertainment by Teresa Egertson Cook. We'll have a small auction, and it's only $75 a person, and tickets are still on sale if you go to parkcityreads.org.
Okay, and again, all of the money then just goes to those
all of
programs
the
that you talked
areas.
About.
That's correct.
Right, and you are also honoring Catherine March. Again, tell us a little bit about why.
So we were really fortunate. We decided, because of the support we've gotten from the tutors and the teachers and all the professionals in the community, we wanted to honor someone starting this year, hopefully every year, somebody different. And we had a great group of impressive pool of candidates that were nominated, and Catherine rose to the top. So we were tickled pink that she is our honoree this year. It's called the Elevating Literacy Award. I believe you mentioned that it's for making a significant contribution toward improving the lives of students with reading disabilities, including, of course, dyslexia. And for many reasons, Catherine was chosen. Everybody was great. And so maybe Catherine can give you a little bit of who she is and where she, you know, what she's been doing these last several years.
Yeah, maybe just tell you how you got involved.
You know, it started out as I was a reading aide at Parley's Park and was first introduced to the Wilson Reading Program at the University of Utah Reading Clinic. And I became certified in that program. Got 3 years of training in Wilson, and then I started working privately as a reading therapist in the community. And honored by this award, and feel motivated now to continue in my work and to continue my education.
Yeah, so are you doing what you're doing privately then, or are you back in the schools?
I'm not in the schools. Mm-hmm. I'm out privately still as a private therapist. I did accept a position to become a trainer intern with the Wilson Reading Program. So this summer I'll be going to Boston, and thanks to PC Reads and a very kind and generous donation with my tuition, I will be able to start a year-long internship with Wilson so that I can become a trainer of teachers.
So talk to me a little bit about this Wilson Reading Program. I mean, what is it and why is it different?
It is an Orton-Gillingham-based reading program. It's multisensory. It's very explicit. It is geared to teaching children who have been diagnosed with dyslexia to read. It's very specific, and it works. I was fortunate enough to have had Jackie's daughter as my practicum student. And it's the way to teach children with dyslexia how to read.
Interesting. So it's only for dyslexic children? I mean, how we're teaching all children to read now?
Not necessarily. I mean, anyone could read that way, but it's specifically, you know, geared towards someone with dyslexia. But anyone
would
learn to read.
If I could just chime in, The greatest thing about the Wilson program and any Orton-Gillingham program is that kids, the 80% of the population that learns to read traditionally can learn to read anyway. So now we're capturing the other 20% who struggle to learn to read, not just with dyslexia, but several different types of differences and disabilities. So it pulls in those other 20%. We still might have a few kids that still struggle and need more tutoring or more assistance, and that's what we're trying to work with right now in the district. How are we going to find those children, and what are we going to do with them too? And we'd like to continue on that path. But the beauty is that now we hopefully are teaching closer to 100% of the students versus the 80% with the 20% getting lost. And I think from the feedback that we've been getting from the teachers with having Wilson Foundations within the curriculum of the elementary schools, they are saying that it is working. Less kids are struggling. More kids are learning. And it's becoming a much happier place in the classroom.
So it's not about the letters and the phonics, as we're talking about. I mean, how when you talk about sensory reading, how is it other than black and white on the paper?
Well, with the multisensory, you're working with, you know, tactile tiles and padding, and you're engaging more than just the auditory. You know, visual, tactile. And it's really, the main thing is that it's very explicit. It's very sequential. And what Jackie is referring to, too, is the fact that when Wilson has different programs, and the foundation program that's been introduced in the schools is starting early with the students. And early identification is the key. You know, we can catch kids who may potentially have had issues with reading and make it so they never do. You know, and with the foundations, every kid does benefit from that type of instruction. It helps with reading and spelling and with writing. So,
yeah, reading and spelling, do those tend to go hand in hand?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you were to try and teach the kid to read The Cat Goes Into the House, I mean, is it that you have a furry cat and a model house? I mean, I guess, yeah. So that you can visually see cat with cat? I don't know.
Yeah. No. It's not that so much. It's that you have the visual displays that you're going to show the children, and then they're going to be tapping on their fingers. So if you spell the word cat, we're going to teach them how to hear each individual sound and how to tap on their fingers each sound. So then when they go back to spell it, they will have that physical touch on their fingers, and then they can put it onto the paper. And the same with the reading. If they come to a word they don't know, they're going to put their finger on the letters and touch and say each letter sound, and then slowly blend it. And ultimately, you know, once you become a proficient reader, you're not going to be doing it at that small level, but you will be fluent. But that's where you start.
Right, and then you always have a tool to figure out any other word.
Right, and we do. We always say the tools are in their pocket. They never have to carry anything with them. It's kind of hidden tools that they can do it under the table. No one has to see that they're tapping on their fingers. Hmm. You know, that can be under the desk.
Fascinating that somebody figured that out. All right, again, if people are interested in attending the fundraiser, what do they need to do?
Go to parkcityreads.org, and you can buy tickets. It takes you to a website, which is Square. Tickets are still available all through the next couple of days, and we look forward to seeing everybody there.
Okay. Hey, Jackie and Catherine, congratulations to you. Thanks for coming
in. Thank you.